Welcome to the Insight Functional Health audio series, where we explore the science behind brain health, healthy aging, and personalized functional medicine, helping you better understand your health and the choices that support lifelong vitality.
Imagine, just for a second, that you want to test your physical fitness.
Okay.
You go to the doctor, right? And they wrap that cuff around your arm. They take your resting heart rate.
Check your blood pressure, all that.
Exactly. And let's say those numbers come back pristine. Like, exactly the same as they were when you were in college.
Which would be nice.
Right. But does that mean you can just walk out of that clinic, head straight to a track, and run a mile just as fast as you did back then?
Obviously not.
Or, you know, jump in a pool and swim laps for an hour? Of course not. You know instinctively that sitting totally still on that crinkly exam paper doesn't tell you a single thing about how your muscles, your lungs, or your heart actually perform under stress.
No, it's a completely static measurement.
Right. But here is the wild thing. When it comes to the most complex organ in your body, your brain, sitting still on a table, is almost exclusively how we try to measure its health.
Yeah, and it's a massive, a truly massive blind spot in modern medicine right now.
Welcome to today's deep dive, everyone. We are exploring the cutting-edge science of measuring and actually, more importantly, training your functional brain health.
Because, you know, we have become incredibly proficient at taking pictures of the brain. But a picture doesn't tell you how the machinery is operating in real time.
Exactly. If you go in for a standard brain scan, like a CT scan or an MRI, you're getting a structural map.
Right. They're looking for architecture.
Yeah, they can find a tumor or a hemorrhage or, I don't know, a skull fracture.
Mm-hmm.
But think about your daily life. If you pull an all-nighter for a massive project at work and then drink like a dozen shots of espresso,
your structural MRI won't look any different at all.
Nothing. But your brain function, it'll be completely altered. You'll feel jittery. Your focus will be totally shot. Your reaction times will lag.
Or in a much more serious scenario, if you suffer a concussion.
Right. A standard CT scan usually won't even detect the concussion itself. It just tells the doctor, hey, good news, you don't have a life-threatening brain bleed.
Yeah, to see how your mind is actually working, you need a functional measure.
Which brings us to the core of what we are unpacking today. We're looking at this really fascinating stack of clinical research from a group called Cortical Metrics.
Specifically detailing a piece of hardware they use known as the brain gauge.
And we're pairing their diagnostic findings with a brand new, honestly, deeply philosophical preprint paper. It was deposited in June 2026 by Erskine Maderina.
Titled, The Signal Before the Response.
It's brilliant. So our mission for this deep dive is to figure out why traditional brain scans are failing us, how the secret to assessing mental fitness is literally in our fingertips, and why the ultimate key to thinking faster is actually learning to slow down.
It's a lot to unpack, but it all starts with the hardware.
Yeah. Let's talk about this brain gauge device because it does not look like medical equipment at all. It looks exactly like a computer mouse.
It really does. You just rest your index and middle fingers on two small probes.
And then the device delivers these highly precise vibrotactile stimuli to those two fingertips. Essentially, it's just tiny computer-controlled buzzing.
Right, and by asking you to evaluate those vibrations, the system somehow maps how your central nervous system is processing information.
But hold on, I need to stop right here and just push back on this premise.
Okay, go for it.
Why touch? I mean, if I go to a neurologist, they usually shine a pen light in my eyes to check my pupils, right? Or they make me listen to varying pitches in headphones.
Or whack your knee with a rubber hammer.
Exactly. Using visual or auditory tests seems like the absolute gold standard in medicine. Why are we buzzing the fingers to understand how fast someone can think?
It does seem counterintuitive at first, but the somatosensory system, our sense of touch, is uniquely wired into the brain compared to our eyes or ears. It is highly somatotopic.
Somatotopic, meaning what? The physical geography of the body maps directly to the physical geography of the brain.
Yes, exactly that. Adjacent regions on your skin, like your index and middle fingertips, they project directly to adjacent cortical regions in your brain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there is a direct, reliable physical hardwiring there. Vision and hearing just don't have that same pristine mapping.
Okay, that makes sense.
Plus, think about the environment you're in right now. Your visual and auditory systems are constantly just bombarded by background noise.
Right. Lights flickering, cars driving by outside, the hum of my refrigerator.
Exactly. Your tactile system has far, far less environmental noise to filter out.
So it's kind of like using a direct Ethernet cable plugged right into the router, rather than relying on a spotty Wi-Fi signal where, you know, everyone else's devices are causing interference.
That is a perfect analogy. And crucially, touch is the only sensory system highly integrated with the body's pain network.
Oh, interesting. How does that factor in?
Well, if someone is experiencing chronic pain, that ongoing pain signal physically alters and actually suppresses the mechanical processing areas of the cortex.
So by testing touch, we get this really pristine window into the brain's baseline interactions without all that visual or auditory clutter.
Exactly. We're bypassing the traffic jams.
Okay, I buy that. So the first thing they measure through these buzzing probes is reaction time. Now, a normal reaction time is about 200 milliseconds, right?
Give or take, yeah. The absolute elite performers sit around 140 milliseconds.
But there is a detail in the research regarding how we actually improve that speed.
Yeah.
That is just fascinating.
Oh, the 1965 study?
Yes. There was a study conducted back in 1965 that showed you could significantly improve a person's reaction time using negative reinforcement.
And by negative reinforcement.
I mean, they were literally giving the human subjects an electric shock if they didn't press the button fast enough.
Yeah, science in the 60s was a wild time.
Right. Now, obviously, we do not recommend hooking yourself up to a car battery to improve your brain health. Please do not do that.
Definitely not.
But it proves something fundamental, right? About how our brains prioritize information.
It proves that effort is a massive, often unmeasured variable. When we test reaction time, we aren't just testing the speed of the nerve impulse.
We're testing what? The subject's intent.
Intent, focus, their overall arousal level. The threat of a physical shock basically forces maximum neurological effort.
Uh-huh.
Now, in a modern non-shock context, we see similar positive impacts on reaction time from caffeine.
Right, the classic biohack. Drink a coffee, think faster. Everyone does it.
But the data reveals a really vital limitation here. Caffeine helps reaction time under normal circumstances, sure.
Okay.
But if you look at subjects after, say, 72 hours of severe sleep deprivation, caffeine's positive impact is completely nullified.
Wait, really? It just stops working entirely.
Entirely. Think about the last time you pulled an all-nighter and chugged 3 energy drinks. You might have felt awake, right?
Yeah, heart racing, jittery.
But functionally, your nervous system was completely misfiring. The underlying cellular battery is just too depleted for the stimulant to force a faster signal.
That is wild. But beyond raw speed, what the clinical data suggests is even more revealing is reaction time variability.
Yes, variability is huge.
Variability meaning how consistent your reaction times are from trial to trial.
Exactly. A healthy adult typically has a variability of just 5 to 22 milliseconds between their attempts. They are locked in.
So very little fluctuation.
Right. If your reaction times are jumping wildly, say 200 milliseconds on the first try, then 400, then 200, and that lack of consistency is highly sensitive to central nervous system insults.
So it's a red flag.
A major one. Poor consistency is what we look for to flag issues like severe cognitive fatigue or conditions like ADHD. It shows the brain's spotlight of attention is flickering. It's just unable to maintain a steady state.
Okay, so speed is great, but raw speed without accuracy or consistency is, well, it's just a fast mistake.
Exactly.
How does the brain actually sort out what's important from the noise? Because otherwise, wouldn't we just react to every single stimulus around us?
We would, and it would be overwhelming.
Which leads to this deeply counterintuitive concept in the research. It shows that a healthy, high-performing brain is actually supposed to be easily fooled.
Yes. For this, we have to look at a mechanism called lateral inhibition. This is basically the brain's method for creating contrast.
Contrast, like putting on noise-canceling headphones to hear the music better.
Yeah.
Or like adjusting a camera lens to blur the background.
Those are good analogies. The manual actually uses the analogy of an old television set with a contrast dial.
Okay, I remember those.
When a physical signal comes into a healthy brain, it excites a specific cluster of neurons. But to make that signal sharp and clear, the brain actively turns off or inhibits the surrounding neuronal areas.
Oh, I see. So it artificially turns up the target and turns down the noise.
Precisely. And it does this using an inhibitory neurotransmitter called GABA.
So GABA is basically the brain's internal dimmer switch. It suppresses the surrounding neurons so the main signal pops out.
That is the biological mechanism, yeah. And the brain gauge tests this using what they call an amplitude discrimination test.
How does that work?
The device will stimulate both of your fingers simultaneously, but one vibration will be slightly stronger than the other, and the test just asks which finger buzzed harder.
Okay, and a healthy person should easily be able to tell, right? If my brain is working perfectly, I should be highly sensitive to which buzz is stronger.
Actually, no.
Wait, what?
If your brain is healthy, you will struggle immensely to tell which is stronger. Because of that lateral inhibition, the two adjacent areas of your brain receiving the signals are actively trying to suppress each other using GABA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they are fighting for dominance, which muddies the waters of your perception. You essentially fail the test.
Hold on, you're telling me a high-performing brain actually fails the test? That sounds completely backward.
It does, but it's a feature, not a bug. Think about it. If a patient takes this test and they can easily and perfectly tell the difference between the two simultaneous vibrations, it is a massive red flag.
Because they don't have enough GABA to blur the lines.
Exactly. It means their lateral inhibition mechanism is broken. Their brain is not producing enough GABA to create that healthy blur between competing signals.
So they're too literal.
Yes. We see this specific lack of contrast enhancement, this unnatural perfection in the test, in populations with autism, in people suffering from severe migraines, and critically, in patients who have recently suffered a concussion.
Okay, my mind is slightly blown right now. Failing the test means your GABA levels are healthy, and passing it with flying colors means your brain isn't filtering information properly.
That's it, exactly.
And this mechanism explains why our brains fall for illusions, right? I mean, we've all seen visual optical illusions, like where a gray circle looks smaller or darker just because it's surrounded by a pattern of giant white circles.
Right. The brain is actively altering reality to create contrast.
Well, the research says your brain does the exact same thing with the sense of touch.
It really does.
If the testing device delivers a long, steady conditioning vibration to one finger before the actual test, a healthy brain adapts to it. It gets used to the buzzing.
Yes, it habituates.
Right, which makes the subsequent test vibration feel much smaller than it actually physically is. You fall for the tactile illusion.
And if your brain does not fall for that tactile illusion, it is a stark indicator that your neuroplasticity is dangerously low.
Meaning what, exactly?
It means your brain isn't adapting to its environment. It's just passively receiving rigid data.
Wow.
But there is another mind-bending metric related to illusions here, and it deals with neuroinflammation.
Okay, break that down for us.
Imagine the device increases the intensity of a vibration just slightly. It buzzes a little harder. In a healthy brain, the non-neuronal support cells, which are the glial cells, they take a little longer to clean up the neurotransmitters and recover from that stronger physical stimulus.
Ooh. Glial cells. Let's clarify that. These aren't the neurons firing the signal. These are like the maintenance crew cleaning up after the signal fires.
Yeah, that's a great way to view them. They are the structural support. When the stimulus is stronger, the maintenance crew has more to clean up, so it takes them longer to return the local brain area to its baseline resting state.
Okay, makes sense.
Because that cleanup process is extended, your brain actually misinterprets the data. It creates an illusion. You actually feel like the physical vibration lasted for a longer duration of time.
Oh, I see. It's an intensity duration illusion.
Yeah.
The harder the buzz, the longer you think it lasted.
Exactly.
But if someone is suffering from neuroinflammation, what happens then?
Well, if a patient does not feel this illusion, if they can accurately tell the duration of the buzz, regardless of how intense it was, it provides quantifiable physical evidence of neuroinflammation.
Because the maintenance crew isn't doing its job right.
Right. The normal, healthy interaction between the neurons and that glial maintenance crew is disrupted by the inflammation. And what's truly fascinating here is how localized this disruption can be.
Localized how?
In chronic pain patients, this lack of illusion, this specific inflammation, is often localized strictly to the brain hemisphere opposite the side of the body where the pain site is located.
Opposite hemisphere? Wait, why opposite?
Because the human nervous system is crosswired. The sensory nerves from your right hand cross over the brainstem and are processed by the left hemisphere of your brain, and vice versa.
Oh, right, of course.
So chronic pain in the left knee will manifest as neuroinflammation, specifically degrading the right hemisphere's ability to process these illusions.
That is just incredible. We are literally trying to trick the brain to see if it's healthy enough to be fooled.
Yes.
But how do we put all these individual weird illusions and reaction times into a single grade? I mean, we've talked about speed, focus, plasticity, inflammation. If I'm a doctor or an athlete, I need a bottom line.
The bottom line is achieved through something Cortical Metrics calls the cortical metric.
Okay, naming is a bit on the nose, but sure.
The system takes all these separate test results and uses principal component analysis to map them into an n-dimensional space.
Wait, n-dimensional space? You just lost me. Are we talking sci-fi physics here, or just a really complicated scatter plot?
It is essentially a highly sophisticated scatter plot, yeah. Huh. Or you can visualize it like a radar chart you might see in a video game for a character's stats.
Oh, okay, I can picture that.
When you combine all these metrics, healthy control subjects tightly cluster right in the physical center of the graph.
The bullseye.
Exactly. But individuals who are concussed or suffering from a neurological impairment, they visibly drift outward to the edges of that graph. And the severity of their symptoms directly correlates to how far they drift from that healthy center point.
But what about the standard tests we already use? I mean, anytime an athlete takes a heavy hit on a football field, they do the balance test on the sideline, right?
Yeah, it's standard protocol.
Or they take one of those online cognitive tests where they click cards. Are we saying those tests are missing this functional data?
Missing it would be an understatement. Relying on those single symptom tests can be profoundly dangerous.
There is a study of 200 concussed individuals in this research that highlights exactly how dangerous. It blew me away.
It's pretty shocking.
They took these concussed patients and gave them the standard balance test. Post-concussion, those individuals actually tested 13% better on their balance than their pre-concussion baseline.
Let that sink in.
Their balance somehow improved after brain trauma. It makes no sense. Meanwhile, when those same exact people were tested on the brain gauge looking at lateral inhibition and plasticity, it found that 99% of them had highly quantifiable functional deficits.
And this highlights a terrifying flaw in how we clear people to return to normal life or return to contact sports.
Because we're using bad metrics.
The clinical data clearly shows that patients are routinely passing standard online cognitive tests by day 7 post-injury.
Day 7.
And they are being fully medically cleared by clinicians by day 14. But when you track their lateral inhibition metrics, their brain's fundamental biological ability to filter information and create contrast, those metrics are still dangerously abnormal up to 28 days out.
Wow. Double the time.
Testing a single symptom like balance to diagnose a complex cascading brain injury is, as the researchers put it, like measuring the force of a sneeze to diagnose a cold.
That's a great way to put it.
It's a symptom, yes, but it tells you absolutely nothing about the underlying viral infection.
Wait, so passing standard concussion tests by day 7 doesn't mean you're healed. It just means we're using the wrong ruler to measure the damage.
Exactly.
That is terrifying for anyone who plays contact sports or anyone who has ever, like, slipped on the ice and hit their head.
It really forces us to reevaluate what recovery actually means at a cellular level.
Which brings us to the most practical question. If our brains are broken, if our lateral inhibition is shot, and we are drifting to the edge of that scatter plot, how do we fix it?
That's the million-dollar question.
Because human instinct says that if we want to get better, we need to try harder and go faster. Like, if my reaction time is lagging, I'm going to push myself with high-speed cognitive training. I'm going to try to beat the clock.
And according to Erskine Materina's preprint paper, that instinct is the exact reason people fail to rehabilitate their brains.
This is the philosophy part we mentioned earlier.
Right. Materina's core thesis fundamentally challenges the whole train faster approach. He argues that perception is always unconditionally upstream of speed.
Upstream, meaning it has to happen first.
Yes. You cannot physically respond to a signal that your brain has not yet resolved. Mm-hmm. Speed is simply the most visible, easily measurable variable at the very end of the biological chain.
So we focus on speed because it's easy to see.
Exactly. He uses a brilliant analogy here. Speed is like a 200-pound dumbbell. If you walk into a gym and you try to curl it and you fail, it doesn't mean you have lost the ability to lift entirely.
Right.
It just means the load is completely wrong for your current capacity.
This leads to a concept he calls the epistemological trap. I love this. It sounds incredibly dense, but it's something we literally all do.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's say you're taking a cognitive test, and you have a 750 millisecond window to respond to a stimulus. You feel the buzz on your finger. You hesitate for just a fraction of a second while your brain tries to resolve what it felt, and then you click the mouse.
But the window has already closed. The time ran out.
Exactly. And what does the human being do in that moment? They blame the device. They assume the computer mouse is broken or the software glitched. They never, ever assume their own brain was too slow to perceive the signal.
And Maturina explains exactly why we do this. We are structurally, epistemologically blind to our own resolution failures.
Meaning, if I can't perceive the lag, how do I know I'm lagging?
Exactly. We can easily watch someone else take a test, watch them hesitate, and clearly see that their perception is delayed. We can judge their failure objectively.
But we can't do it to ourselves.
No, because the internal faculty doing the evaluating is the very faculty being evaluated. It is a closed loop.
It's like trying to bite your own teeth.
Basically, yeah. He connects this to the linguistic concept of minimal pairs. In language learning, there are specific phonetic contrasts, subtle differences between two sounds that exist in some languages but not others.
Okay, I remember learning about this in a psych class.
Right. If your brain literally cannot hear the phonetic contrast between two distinct sounds, that contrast functionally does not exist for your reality.
It sounds like when you're watching a foreign movie with delayed subtitles. You know, you're getting frustrated, you're blaming the actors for speaking weirdly or the plot for not making sense, but really, your internal translation software is just lagging by 2 seconds.
That's a perfect parallel. And in the linguistic example, speaking faster or forcing someone to listen to the language at double speed won't magically make them hear the hidden contrast.
You just miss it twice as fast.
Exactly. You have to slow down. Maturina uses a baseball analogy. You have to train your eyes to track the rotation of the seam on the pitch before you spend hours in the batting cage training the physical speed of your swing.
If you can't actually see the ball, a faster swing just means you miss the ball faster.
Precisely.
So the actionable solution here, what Maturina argues everyone must do, whether they are rehabilitating from a severe concussion or they're just a healthy person trying to optimize their mental performance, is to start with what the Brain Gauge Protocol calls therapeutic exercises.
Yeah, therapeutic over basics.
These are exercises with significantly slower, longer, heavily amplified signals. You aren't training for speed. You are training the brain's internal translation software to actually hear the signal clearly first.
Right.
Only when your perception is completely resolved, meaning you are scoring 100% accuracy on those slow, easy tests, should you introduce the basics, which is the speed training.
And even then, he recommends only doing a 50-50 mix of slow perceptual training and fast reaction training.
Because if you just train speed,
you are constantly forcing your nervous system to generate tension and frustration against a signal it hasn't actually processed. You are reinforcing a broken loop. You have to build the perceptual foundation first, and then speed naturally has a clean signal to act upon.
So to summarize this incredibly deep journey we've been on today, we started by learning that measuring your functional brain health through the unique pathways of your sense of touch is vastly superior to taking a static structural picture of your brain.
Without a doubt.
We discovered the deeply counterintuitive reality that if your brain successfully falls for physical tactile illusions, it actually means your lateral inhibition, your internal dimmer switch, and your neuroplasticity are healthy and functioning.
Failing is passing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And finally, we learned that when you are trying to train your mind or heal your brain, perception must always unconditionally precede speed.
Which is such a hard lesson for people to learn.
Why does this matter to you listening right now? Maybe you are recovering from persistent brain fog after an illness and wondering why you still feel sluggish. Maybe you're an athlete trying to safely return to the field and you don't want to rely on a floozy balance test.
Which you shouldn't.
Or maybe you're tracking the efficacy of a new diet or biohacking supplement. Or maybe you're just trying to optimize your mental focus for a massive project at work. Whatever your goal, understanding these hidden functional mechanisms and realizing that your brain might be tricking you about how fast it's actually working is the ultimate tool. You simply cannot fix what you cannot accurately measure.
You really can't.
So what does this all mean for how we view our reality? I'm going to pass it over to our expert for one final lingering thought.
This entire deep dive raises a deeply provocative, honestly, almost philosophical question for you to ponder long after this is over. If a perfectly healthy, high-functioning brain fundamentally relies on illusions, if it actively suppresses data and distorts physical reality just to function efficiently, and if we are completely epistemologically blind to our own perceptual delays,
yeah.
How much of our everyday subjective reality are we slightly misperceiving right now without even realizing it? And is our modern pursuit of perfect objective perception actually a pursuit of a malfunctioning brain?
That is a thought that will definitely keep me up tonight. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep challenging what you think you know, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Insight Functional Health. If you found this conversation helpful, explore more educational resources on our website at insightfunctionalhealth.com. If you're looking for personalized guidance, schedule a free discovery call to learn whether our approach is right for you.